Welcome to the Ask Sensei Tony podcast, where Sensei will address your questions about life from a cosmic perspective. Please subscribe and ask a question at AskSenseiTony.com to find out more about studying with Sensei privately, becoming a part of our spiritual community, and training to become a mindful minister of oneness in our seminary. We hope you enjoy this episode and find it helpful.
Hi, I'm Sensei Tony. Today's question comes from Bill. And Bill asks, "Dear Sensei, I have heard you say that we should not make decisions based on feelings, but I married my husband because I love him and changed jobs because I was no longer excited about my old one. Were these decisions wrong? What should I have based my decisions on?" Well, first of all, Bill, thank you for the question. So there's two-parter here. The first part is you're saying, look, I made these decisions based on feelings. And I'm assuming from what you said that those decisions turned out well. That you're happily married and you're enjoying your new job much more than you did your old one. And if that's what's happening, good on you. I have never said that if someone makes a decision out of a feeling that that means it'll automatically be the wrong one or bad. Not the case at all. What I'm saying, and I'm doing this from a place of the way I approach mindfulness in the four direction system of mindfulness, is that I know that from that perspective, that the way I'm thinking, you know, I go back to Buddha who says, you know, everything is made up of our thoughts, you know. The way we're thinking influences the way we're feeling, and the way that we're feeling influences the way we're acting, and the way we're acting influences the consequences that result. And then what happens is you get in this kind of this feedback loop, right? So if things are going well, you know, you could call that loop nirvana, man. And if things aren't going well, then we call that samsara in Buddhism. Wheel of suffering. So when we understand the way the mind works and the way that stuff flows, feelings, because they are based so much on the thoughts we're having, and perhaps the beliefs that precede the thoughts. Well, the problem comes in if those thoughts or beliefs are not clear. Now, I'll talk a little bit what I mean by clear. But if they're not clear, then the corresponding feelings are not going to be good either. So what I mean by clear is that my thoughts are not rooted in delusion. In other words, I'm not being unreasonable or unrealistic about the way I'm seeing things. I'm not coming from a place where I'm mainly focused on the unknown. I'm kind of focused on the known. Because I always say that reality is your best friend, even when it's unpleasant, because at least you know what's what and you know what to do. So if I'm making decisions out of feelings that are based on unclear thoughts, then those feelings are probably not going to be clear either. And there's the possibility, the great potential, that I will bring about consequences I didn't want. And I shouldn't say I didn't intend, because that's a very different subject that I can talk about. Because I do believe intention is all we have. And then intention equals purpose. So if you want to know what your purpose is, whatever your intention is, that's your purpose. And yes, things can go opposite or differently from how you intended. And you have no control over that. That's why the power of intention is so important. You know, and I'll say that all the time, anything I approach. you got to kind of know your intention going in. You got to know what your intentions are. That's your purpose. So that's pretty much it. So let's take the example that someone does make a decision out of their feelings and it turned out not so good. Well, that's where they can, you know, they're more likely to kind of use these inquisitive queries to kind of find out, well, what were my thoughts at that time? And was my action based on on delusion, on fear, on greed, on hatred? What was it based on, you know? And was it based on anger? And once you start to recognize those patterns, you're going to start to see that if your thoughts are unclear, then the feelings you're having are probably not either. And I wouldn't say probably, they're not. And so then you're going to create a cascading series of consequences. And once you understand the relationship between thoughts and feelings, there are certain ideas that become very clear. Like, for example, when it comes to feelings, what I say to people is that feelings are a really brilliant exemptiveness, or the type of translation that's used often for the old Sanskrit word shunya or shunyata. And what does emptiness mean? It means that nothing has an independent existence. Everything is an interdependent existence. And so feelings are an incredibly easy and dynamic way to understand that teaching and sort of demystify it and make it very simple and easy to apply in one's life. Excuse me. And so that's the first thing that I teach about feelings. And the second thing I teach about feelings is that your feelings can become a mindfulness bell, so that when you have a certain type of discursive feeling, let's say anger, anxiety, fear, whatever, then that is like a little bell that tells you, oh, okay, I got to stop. That's my philosophy. I want to stop, look at what's happening, and listen deeply to the dialogue that's going on inside my head, because then I'm gonna not act out of my feelings. And that's something that I also teach, that whatever you do, learn to stop acting out of your feelings, because they're poor guides for your life. But a positive way to look at it, like I say, is a mindfulness bell. And it also helps, too. Like, if somebody comes to me with anxiety or somebody comes to me with certain sort of mood states, I always tell them that, you know, I think from an evolutionary point of view, these reactions were part of our defense system, you know. And, you know, people can argue that back and forth. But I have found that by having a more positive view of what's happening. So in other words, if I'm someone who's having anxiety attacks, to realize that anxiety is not my problem. That anxiety is a natural defense mechanism that evolved in humans because we don't really have claws, we don't really have fangs, we don't really have a lot of weapons that are natural to us, like a tiger or a bear. So we had to learn to use other ways to defend ourselves. And I think that you can make a pretty good argument that everyone currently alive today is the descendant of someone who had successfully used anxiety to stay alive. So I don't think it's essentially a bad thing. And it's just a reactive system that evolution has kind of created in us. And so, you know, the difference, as I often say, between a human being and another type of animal is that, like my cat, I always use my cat, Sir Basil. So Sir Basil, if he is disturbed by something, so if we're sitting outside on the back patio and suddenly he kind of hears or smells or, you know, sees something, and I don't necessarily see it because he has greater powers of that than I do. He will, you know, his hair will go up on his back and he'll arch and he might hiss or growl, you know. And it's just like automatic. And then I can always tell when the threat's gone, because he'll just go back to laying down and licking himself, cleaning himself, you know. And that's it, man. You know, he doesn't carry that with him. He doesn't come back in the house and start thinking, oh, God, you know, when I go back out with Dad, you know, what's going to happen? And in some ways, animals are blissfully, it's not blissful ignorance. It's just a blissful sort of existence where you kind of go in and go out. And I also think that when you have animals that are exhibiting anxiety and things of that nature, which doesn't seem to be related to a particular situation, I think that has more to do with the humans in the room than the animal. I know from my clinical experience of practicing pastoral counseling that when working with children, children up to a certain age are largely like satellites of the adults that they're around. And I think animals are the same way. I think animals basically react very strongly to what's going on with the human. And that's very challenging. You know, when I share that, sometimes people get their, somebody get their fur up, you know. Because they haven't learned to identify with their true self. So anything that you know, points out something in their ego self realm that isn't helpful, they take it as a personal attack. So they're not probably going to be willing to hear what someone has to say. So the last thing I'll say about feelings is that, let me finish my analogy there. The human, on the other hand, when the human has an encounter that creates some kind of fear reaction, then the human goes back in the house and then starts thinking, oh God, when's the next time I'm going to have that person or that animal show up? So now I've got to protect myself. I've got to start doing other things. And so, you know, it's not enough there might be a tiger outside the cave, using a caveman analogy. But now I've got to worry about the tigers of the mind, you know, which are constantly there, even when the real threat's gone. And that's what makes, part of what makes us human. So, again, if we can view it as something natural and healthy, then all we have to deal with is why is that natural, healthy reaction going overboard? Why do we keep having it? Why does it keep repeating? And aside from the possibility that this might be being created by some kind of biological problem, which I always, someone worse than me, I always, you know, especially if they're suffering from something that is intense, I always say, man, you know, do you have a good doctor? And let's get your doctor involved. And let's do a good checkup. And make sure that your hormonal and endocrine systems are working and functioning right. Because occasionally you'll find people who, you know, there's a biological reason for the way they're exhibiting what seems to be, you know, psychological issues. And I think you always got to include that first ganda, we call it, which means first stage of development, which is the genetic stage, the nature stage. That's not enough. Because we believe there's four other nurturing stages that you have to contend with, but in terms of your conditioning, but certainly you got to do that. But aside from that, let's say that, you know, everything like that checks out, then what I try to do is help the person to see that, first of all, you don't be afraid of when it comes back. You know, and that's tough. You know, if you've ever had an anxiety attack, wow, those are rough, man. But part of what reinforces them is the idea that you're afraid of them. So now it's not just you had a panic attack or an anxiety attack. Now you're afraid you're going to have an anxiety attack. So that just compounds everything. So if you can develop a more positive view towards them, towards those feelings, then it sort of defangs it and paradoxically decreases it. So that's why it's really, really important to kind of use that cosmic perspective from an evolutionary point of view. Because that cosmic perspective is telling us that, you know, these were probably adaptive reactions to our evolutionary adaption. The reputation. Yeah. So anyhow, Bill, you know, if you're enjoying your marriage, which I hope you are, and you're enjoying your new job far better than you were the old one, then right on, man. Good on you, like I said. Clap. I always say if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. But if you're not, then the best tool I know is to use something like the four direction system of mindfulness and get in there, understand the thoughts and beliefs that are creating the feelings, and then, you know, learn how through mindfulness process, a mindful analysis, to get clear with your thoughts. And in the meantime, if you want to cut down on consequences, you're going to cut down on your actions that are coming from feelings that are not based on clarity, then, you know, be resolute in saying, I'm not going to make decisions out of feelings. And it's interesting because you said that, you know, about your partner or your spouse, and you said, well, you know, I based it on feelings. What does that mean? So I'll give you a little background that I might add, you know, to this talk. I kind of understood these things very early on, and I remember when I had met my wife, and I was actually living and working in another state, and I went out with her and then went to work in another state, and we had this really cool sort of letter writing relationship, which was, you know, this is back in the very early 80s, and so, you know, there wasn't cell phones, and it wasn't cheap to make phone calls, and so we wrote letters to each other, which was really lovely. And we would, you know, have like an assigned phone call we would do once a week. But, you know, I quickly fell in love with her. And I'll kind of explain what I mean by that. You know, for, you know, the alchemy of what makes you attracted to someone, I'm sure there's a lot of scientific reasons why, but the truth of the matter is it's a mysterious alchemy, because sometimes you're really drawn to someone, you don't know why, and that person, whatever it is about them, another person might not be able to see it but you do. And I'm sure it's a conglomeration of all kinds of drives and conditionings and so forth and so on, but yeah, heck, it might be pheromones sometimes, but you're drawn to that person. And I think after we were together about 3 months, I came back and I kind of had a conversation with her about whether or not this was going somewhere serious, although I don't like the word serious, I like sincere better. More joy and sincerity. And, you know, full confession, I kind of tricked her. You know, I did have plans at that time I was gung-ho on, and had been for a few years in high school, that I was going to go out to California, and I was become a martial arts actor. And I had a plan. I was going to camp outside Chuck Norris's house and, you know, try to work my way there. And in order to do that, I was going to go to Atlanta, and I was going to work at a karate school there, and a Nautilus Club, which was the first kind of machines that were for weightlifting and stuff that were controlled. They were called Nautilus, and I was a personal trainer in that. And I was going to go out and become a movie star, maybe, or at very least a stuntman. And I was pretty gung-ho on this. And then I met my wife. And so I had to be pretty sure that this was at least starting out on the same foot, you know, that we both had the same intentions. So we did. And then probably was within 6 months, we got engaged. And then we were engaged for 3 years before we got married, and we're now working on our 33rd anniversary, and you know, plus another 3.5 years together. So I'm very blessed and very joyfully in love with my wife. But one of the things I said to her when I asked her to marry me is, I said, now I want you to understand, I'm not doing this from feelings. So that was a little confusing to her. And she didn't quite get it at first. As who, of course, I understood that. Who would? If they don't understand this approach. But I was just saying, I'm not saying I don't have feelings for her. Obviously, I do. And those feelings are based on thoughts that I'm having. But I don't want to make this commitment to her based on that. As powerful as those feelings were, and as strongly as I was attracted to her, and still am, I did not want that to be the basis of our marriage, of our commitment to each other, to walk together down the path of life. And so, I didn't. And I actually will tell you that the same thing was true with my son when he was born. And I actually make that choice every day. I choose to love the people I love. I choose to act that way towards them every day. I don't trust my feelings at all, because I know that feelings and projections are always going to, projections go through waxing and waning periods, you know, like the moon, you know, waxing and waning, and sometimes it's bright and shiny, other times you can't even see it. So there's all kinds of feelings that can go on in your life. But no, I don't think you should make commitments based on that, because there's the vicissitudes of existence are so great that if you're doing that, and if you're basing things on feelings, well, heck, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Because your feelings are totally based on the way you're thinking and believing. And if those thoughts change, then your feelings are going to change. So it's just not a, it's not a balanced way to go. It's not a healthy way to go, in my opinion. So Bill, as I said, blessings on you. I hope it's going well. And if for whatever reason you're hooked or you get stuck, I'm here for you, man. Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask Sensei Tony. Please visit our website at AskSenseiTony.com. Check out Sensei's books and videos, and become a part of the Dragonfly Spiritual Lifestyle.